Welcome to Harvesting the Great Plains, the show about discipleship across the Great Plains Conference. As Jesus said in Matthew chapter 9, verse 37, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. That's why on this show, we celebrate not just the harvest, but the laborers out in the fields. I'm your host, Jana McFarland. On today's show, we'll have the Reverend Nancy Lambert to share with us the theme for Orders and Fellowship this year. Next, we'll have Daryl Anser, who will share with us about Asset-Based Community Development, or ABCD. Finally, Todd Seifert, Director of Communications, will share with us a story about pastors who are on the radio waves. First up, let's talk to Nancy. Nancy, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here, Jana.
Now, as our Director of Clergy Excellence, you have a big part in shaping Orders and Fellowship meeting for the next year. Share with us, what is our theme and what is our focus for this year?
Well, Bishop Sines has chosen to focus on community development. And so we have a theme of learning our ABCDs, moving from what is wrong to what is strong, as a focus on how do we look at communities and how do we look at what is already in our communities that we can build on in our ministries.
Well, how is this different from the way our churches are already functioning?
Some of our churches are already reaching out to the community in a way that would be called asset-based, but many of our churches are doing great things for our communities. They're reaching people in wonderful ways of providing food pantry for them, providing clothing for them, coat closets are popular during this time of year especially. And so they're doing things that meet the needs of people. But looking at asset-based community development is really looking at who the people are in your neighborhood and what are the gifts and the talents that they already have and how can they be built on in order to build up the community and make it a healthier and stronger place for everybody to live. So it's using the people who are outside of the church to be agents for the own transformation in the communities.
Their own transformation.
Yes.
Taking some license in it themselves.
Right.
And so the churches will be finding out what's already going on and where God is at work and
right.
how they can be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And looking at what are the skills and the talents that are in the community around them that they can use within the church even. It might be that there is someone who is willing to teach children or youth how to knit or crochet, for example. And so the church helps to support that as a way of being in ministry to children, getting them off of the street, giving them something productive to do and build a relationship with an older adult. Or it could be someone who has a lawnmower and is willing to mow the church lawn. And so you employ an individual instead of contracting with a lawn service company, for instance. But looking at where are the ways that people are already at work utilizing their skills, and how can we use them in the church?
So is this doing away with the way we're already doing ministry or missions in our churches?
No, it's not doing away with what we already have, but it's adding to it and doing things that actually might make a difference in the systems that help keep people from being affirmed and acknowledged for the gifts and the strengths that they do have. And so it's a way of building up people instead of always making them feel that they don't have anything to offer back.
That makes a lot of sense. What do you hope that our clergy will come away from the Orders and Fellowship meeting with?
Well, I would hope that we have some people who come away from that thinking, wow, I never thought of looking at my neighborhood that way. And I wonder who the people are around my church. Often our churches, as communities have changed, the people who are members of a local church maybe have moved out to the suburbs or out of the neighborhood, and so the church no longer is a neighborhood church, but there's still a neighborhood around the church that isn't being affirmed and acknowledged in any way by the church. So I doubt that we will have every church engaged in asset-based community development, but we hope that there will be some who are willing to give it a try and to build relationships with people who are outside the walls of the church that they haven't yet made those relationships with.
Well, it sounds like our pastors will come away with a lot of tools and ideas to put in place when they go back to their churches.
That's our hope, that they'll be excited and be willing to take a stab at asset-based community development with the lay people in their church.
That's excellent. I can't wait to hear a lot more about that.
Thanks.
Next up, the Reverend Daryl Anser will tell us about asset-based community development in practice. Welcome back to Harvesting the Great Plains. Here with me now is Daryl Anser, the pastor and founder of New Community Church in Kansas City, Missouri. He is also a practitioner of asset-based community development, which Nancy was talking to us about earlier. Thanks for joining us, Daryl.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Now, would you tell me what is asset-based community development, or we'll call it ABCD? What does that mean to you?
So basically, asset-based community development is a sustainable way of building community. Whether it be building community as congregations in a neighborhood, or just as residents in a school, if you're trying to build community within a school or institutional context, the principles, really, communities have been doing this forever. But the ABCD approach, or ABCD Institute, was created by two gentlemen named John McKnight, Jody Kretzman. They studied neighborhoods and found six assets that exist in each of the neighborhoods that they considered to be healthy. And those were individuals and their gifts, the associations, so groups of people that come together based off their passions and gifts, institutions, so for-profit, non-profit, government entities, the land, so the space that makes up the community, the exchange of those being the fifth asset, and then the sixth asset is the culture of a place, or the stories that celebrate a community. So that's what ABCD is.
So it sounds like, with all of those facets in place, this doesn't necessarily mean it's an existing congregation, but it might be, or it might be a church plant, or it might just be something that grows organically within a community. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think any type of community building that takes place, there's an organic element. Mm-hmm. I think especially in our society, we want to figure out how we can manufacture and replicate quickly. But I think with ABCD, when John McKnight and Jody Kretzman, when they went into communities, they saw neighbors who had taken the time to get to know one another, learn one another's gifts, and then mobilize based on those things. And through that, they were able to meet needs. So definitely there's an organic element that takes its time to be what we now call asset-based community development.
So this doesn't happen overnight. This is something that needs commitment and time to grow.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what is your own experience with asset-based community development?
Yeah, it really was it's the foundation of our church. My wife and I live in Kansas City, Missouri. We moved into a neighborhood, knew that God was calling us to start a ministry. But our idea was that we'd move into a place, follow Jesus, and just see what he does. But as we lived in the community, which is it was the east side of Kansas City, a lot of vacant housing, a lot of the issues that you see in an urban context, we realized that there was a need for community. There were neighbors, we were in a neighborhood, but we didn't have a sense of community. So we started doing meals, fellowshipping with our neighbors, and then so that was very organic, but we started to see and learn the gifts of our neighbors. And one of those things we learned was that we have a lot of entrepreneurs in the community. So from that, we began to organize showcases where we celebrated the gifts of our neighbors. And then from that, my wife was able to start a play group in the community with mothers. And that was through a partnership with an organization. And they have replicated those. So again, it began organically. The replication came years later. And then we also started a Bible study in our home, which is now New Community Church. We meet at a local school in the neighborhood. So very grassroots, organic, very slow, you know, building the trust of our neighbors in our community. And now we just got awarded community champion by the health department, you know, because we're serving families that face violence. So.
Wow, congratulations on that.
Thank you, thank you.
Well, it seems then that a lot of people might, your story might resonate with a lot of people. I think many of us live in neighborhoods where we kind of know who our neighbors are, but we don't really know them. We don't know what they do or what their gifts are. They don't know us. But I love that this idea of a church growing from meeting together with your neighbors, having a meal together, learning about each other, grew into an entrepreneurial showcase to play groups. How else are you going to get to know the needs of the neighbors around you and what they are good at and what they can offer? I really think that's inspiring. And so you mentioned that your idea was to move into a place and to grow a church maybe in that area. And I've heard you mention before this theology of place. What is a theology of place?
Yeah, so basically understanding, kind of from the book of Isaiah, when God sent the nation of Israel into exile, Isaiah 29 talks about this idea of God having a plan. But they had to also be in a place and care for a place. And in that place, like basically their liberation was tied to them being connected to that place, right? So a theology of place is us understanding that God is sovereign, God is in full control, and God is at work in these communities. Whether or not I want to engage or not, God's working, right? But I'm invited to participate. As the church, we are invited into that, right? So God is... God is at work in the church, right? But I believe God is still at work in the lives of my neighbors. Am I going to choose to engage in that? And am I going to see the community as my parish, as a pastor, you know, using that word, you know, parish. So not only do I pastor a new community church, but I also pastor my neighborhood. There are people in my neighborhood who will never come and worship with us on a Sunday morning. But on Sundays, they will ask me, hey, pastor, what did you talk about today? Just happened to me a couple weeks ago with a man who's struggling with addiction. He feels shame. He doesn't want to step foot into a church. But I ran into him. He said, hey, what did you talk about this week? I just need a word. I just need some hope. Right. So I think when we adopt a theology of place, our ministry becomes way bigger than the walls of the church. And we see that the community, the place where we find ourselves, is our sanctuary. The streets are our pulpit. The front porches of our neighbors are places where the gospel can be preached. You know, it changes our paradigm, and we see God's reign, His rule, the shalom. We see it breaking in. You know, to where the kingdom is breaking in. We see it breaking in the lives of regular, ordinary people. Right. Besides Sunday morning or Wednesday night Bible study, God's shalom is breaking in at all times.
That's a really beautiful vision, a theology of place, but it turns a lot of our ideas that we have in churches on their heads. You know, this idea that God is inviting us to join into ministry where He's already at work, where we feel like we're the ones offering the invitation.
Absolutely.
Wow. Tell me more about this entrepreneurial affair that you put on with your neighbors. What kind of gifts did you discover, and what kind of entrepreneurs were around you that you had no idea existed?
Yeah, absolutely. So in our community, and then, again, this was very organic. Uh-huh. We were eating one Sunday, and a couple people just shared. One lady, she made clothing. Two ladies, actually. One did upholstery, another lady just made clothing. Someone had a catering company, another was a photographer. We had someone in the neighborhood who had even written a book we didn't even know about, had a published book. So he brought that and read poetry from his book. There was, as a young man at the time, I think he was 8, he has a snow cone company. So on the corner, in our neighborhood, he'd be on the corner through the summer selling snow cones. So we just had all of these businesses in one space. We just celebrate. Like, look at our neighborhood. The news will portray us one way, but look at all that God is doing in this community. Look at the abundance of our neighborhood. How do we then support and invest into these businesses in our community and help grow this local economy?
look at this neighborhood. Look at who these people that God created, look at who they are and what they can do.
Absolutely.
How do you think that's different maybe from the way we are used to looking at our communities and our churches?
You know, I mean, in asset-based community development, obviously we focus on assets, but we compare that to a deficit approach. I think the church for a long time, because we have seen ourselves as the missionaries, it's like the world needs us. So until they accept the gospel, their whole lives is deficit, right? Needs-based, right? So we view our people in that way, view our neighbors, we view the community in that way, especially in poorer communities. We call them under-resourced, right? Especially in those communities, there's almost like they are less than. So that I think that's where we find ourselves a lot. Even if you look at a lot of our missionary work in the church, we go to communities that are poor. And if you're in the workshop that I shared earlier, there's a kind of an equation that I kind of use a lot, which is the Missio Dei minus Imago Dei equals colonization.
Oh.
So we just have to be very careful that as we do this missional work, we have to make sure that we're seeing the image of God in the people that we're approaching. I think that changes the way we do ministry. When we're in a place and we come to the realization that whether they're in the church or outside the church, they're still made in the image of God. Like God's fingerprint is still on them. And so that changes how we approach people. You know, and hopefully that'll be liberating and freeing, where you don't feel like you have to change or fix somebody. But you obviously, we want to share the gospel. We want to see people come to know Christ and be reconciled back to the Father through Jesus. We want to see that. But we also realize that they have something that we need, you know, so it can be a mutual relationship.
A mutual relationship. I imagine that would have an effect on how the community members see themselves, maybe in the way that we change the way we see them.
Absolutely, yeah. So in ABCD, we talk about the consequences of having a deficit approach. And one of the first things we say is that when a neighborhood is only seen by as it's identified by its needs, or when a person is only identified as needy, right, poor, less than, they themselves see themselves as deficient. You know, so just imagine if a community you live in is only seen and recognized by what's wrong with it. And obviously that's all you're gonna believe about yourself, right? And it breeds hopelessness. You know, the Bible says hope deferred makes the heart sick. So that's why we see so much violence and brokenness, and it's because the community the outside world doesn't value it. It doesn't value itself. So then we see a lot of these issues.
So how would a community-based approach maybe change some of those trends, the violence, the crime or the poverty, the hopelessness in a neighborhood?
Yeah. I mean, there have been studies done in this. One of the best ways to reduce crime, there's a book called The Great American City. And one of my mentors, John McKnight, he referred me to this book. But in this book, after I believe 10 years of study, they concluded that the best way to decrease crime is for people to know their neighbor's name and to be outside. So if we want to see crime decreased in our community, yes, there's the systemic stuff we have to deal with. People need jobs. All of those things are true, but you see crime decrease when people know their neighbors and when people choose to be outside of their homes and commune with one another. Crime goes down.
That seems so simple. Just get to know your neighbors' names.
Yeah.
You know, get be outside more. I've noticed that even in my own suburban neighborhood that I don't let my kids play in the front yard because nobody's ever outside. There's no eyes on the kids.
Absolutely.
What if we all made a commitment to be neighbors to each other?
Absolutely.
You know, I can see what a difference that would make in my life, but also in the community around my church, which is much different from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
How do you hope that maybe churches, you know, across the Great Plains, we have churches who are in urban settings, but then we have a lot of churches who are in rural areas. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're a little more isolated, or maybe their communities are just different.
Yeah.
How do these ideas translate into those kinds of communities?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to all the communities,
sure,
but I hope there are individuals there
yes,
who have some gifts.
Uh-huh.
Churches can then help to create or connect with associations, which are those small groups of people that are there of their own choice, right? And churches can help to build the associational life of those places. I'm sure there is at least one institution, nonprofit, for-profit, or government. There's land, and the churches can help create some type of exchange, by connecting.
Right.
Or finding a connector in that community.
Finding a connector. Now, what is the idea of a connector?
Yeah, so a connector is a person, an institution, or an association that takes upon themselves the task of connecting the assets in a community. They're usually someone or a group that's trusted. They believe in the gifts of a community. They believe that the community is welcoming, and they do the work of listening to the community and doing the hard work of connecting. My wife is an amazing connector. She will be in a room with someone. This has happened a few weeks ago. She heard that someone wanted to open a home for women who are just coming home from prison. But we also know somebody that's trying to start the same thing in the same neighborhood. So my wife was like, hey, you all need to get together and do this together because you'll be stronger together. You know, so that type of work, connecting rather than you've got competing programs and things, how do we do this together? How do we do it stronger?
Sure. And I have yet to meet a church who doesn't have that one person who's really good at seeking out those opportunities in the community, whose their wheels are always turning. They're putting people together. They're putting ideas together. Every church has one of those. So that really does speak to the idea of intentionally finding where God is already at work, where God is inviting us to be engaged and jumping in with that. Here in Topeka, where the Great Plains Conference office is based, it seems like ABCD would be striking at just the right time. There's been this explosion of Topeka positivity right now. You know, Topeka has traditionally had a reputation maybe of, it's been said this town has a self-esteem problem. People talk about the crime and the poverty, the rundown buildings, but there's people who have lived here forever who have said, no, there's so much more going on here. So we have this kind of a renaissance of our downtown. We have Facebook groups that are all about, tell about your positive experience in Topeka and let's share the good things that are happening. So the moment is hot. People really want that. We're tired of the way we've seen our communities, and not just in Topeka, but everywhere. And we're ready for this. But it seems like we might be tempted to take this on in the wrong way. What are some pitfalls we might avoid as churches?
Yeah, I think Mike Mathis says this, who's missing from the conversation? If it's the same people that are always at the table, that could be a pitfall. Who are the marginalized group? You know, you talk about in Topeka, there have been this negative mindset, this negative view. Who are the people who suffer as a result of those? How can they be brought into the conversation as it relates to the Renaissance? Are they contributing to the Renaissance? Sometimes in our work to create a Renaissance, sometimes we're unintentionally hurting those, right? There could be some negative consequences. So I think what the church can do is making sure that there's enough room at the table for all voices to be heard. Sometimes there has to be a completely new table, right? How do we scrap how we've done it before and start something new and fresh, which takes a lot of courage. And I'm not going to speak to that denominationally, but sometimes there needs to be new wine and some new wineskins. You know?
Yes. As a Methodist, that makes me a little nervous starting a whole new table. Uh-huh. Our table's been there for a very long time.
Yeah.
But, the table doesn't mean much if it's empty. I love that you're reminding us to look at who's missing from the conversation. And if there is somebody missing, we need to invite them into it. I think also our churches might be tempted, because it's the way we know, of hearing this idea of asset-based community development. We get real excited about it. And so our first step might be to form a committee or, to make a new policy to support it. But this seems to be need a little bit more of an organic movement than that. Can you explain more about how we might help this grow from the ground up rather than be something that we institutionalize into everything else that we've done?
Yeah, I think internally within the congregations, there could be the work to just learn the gifts of the people who are there. And we talk about the gifts of the head, hands, and heart. So the gifts of the head being things that you enjoy to learn about, things you can teach. Gifts of the hands are skills you've learned over time. And the gifts of the heart are something you're passionate about, you're willing to do something about, to take action on. So I think that could be the internal work, just coming together, sharing a meal, and just learning each other's gifts and celebrating that. And then another thing is just getting out and just walking the community and seeing what happens. It's amazing what happens when you get out and just walk and who you can connect with. Now, again, I don't know what this looks like in rural communities. You might be saying that doesn't work here. But I don't know what it would look like in every single space to just get outside and try and connect with the people. Find where the people are gathered.
Sure.
And if there are places, if people aren't gathering, then try and create that. So that's what we did in our neighborhood with the dinners. There was nowhere for people to go. There was no social space. We didn't even have a grocery store at that point. So we decided to use our homes to be that space. So I think those are two simple things. Learn the gifts of the people you're already in relationship with,
mm-hmm.
to kind of create that culture of seeing what's good and positive in people, and then also going out and seeing, okay, what's happening around us.
Sure.
Doing an asset map.
Well, we can ask the Holy Spirit to guide us in going outside the doors and showing us something new. No matter how long we've been in one place, there's always something new to be revealed to us and to find out how we can be a part of that.
Absolutely.
So what are some questions then? You say you start maybe with the people that we know that, and already have relationships with, but I don't know, I feel a little awkward sitting around a dinner table talking to people. What are the questions that get to the heart of who this person is, their hands, head, heart gifts?
Yeah. Could be questions like, one friend of mine asked the question, people who love you the most, what do they say that you're good at? What do you like to spend your time doing? What brings you the most joy? What's some things that make you smile? What makes you get up out of bed each morning? What motivates you? I think those types of questions.
Everybody wants to be known.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So those kinds of questions that you, in your heart, you do want to answer. You know what gets you out of bed every day. Or maybe you don't, and maybe someone talking through it with you will help.
Absolutely, yeah. And there are some people who struggle to know what their gifts are. They don't
mm-hmm.
know. So I think when we're in relationship with people, there may be others who have to point those gifts out.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that you're an amazing host, which I've had to do this with a couple in my church. They're an amazing, amazing hosts. So now they lead our hospitality ministry. They're amazing at it. But when I approached them, they were like, really? And like, yeah, I've watched you. We've been in your home. You're amazing at it. Why don't you lead this in for our church? You know? So
this really does approach each individual with this mindset that everybody has something to offer.
Absolutely.
Everybody has something to bring to this table.
Absolutely.
And everybody is created in the image of God.
Right. Doesn't that sound like the kingdom?
That sounds like the kingdom. That does. It sounds like what we're all hungry for.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Daryl.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Next up, Todd Seifert will tell us a story of two pastors who are hitting the waves. The airwaves, that is.
Stay better connected to the Great Plains Conference and track success with your spiritual disciplines by downloading and using our new app. Our primary social media channels appear on the homepage of our app. Need a daily devotion? Look no further than our link to the Upper Room, right on the home screen of our app. Our communications staff will keep you up to date on the latest stories from within the conference and beyond Kansas and Nebraska. And we'll help you stay on track with your spiritual disciplines with our spiritual fitness tracker. Each time you complete one of the five disciplines, we help you measure on the app. You just click a button to get a point. To help you stay healthy, we even have a fitness tracker that allows you to record your time taking part in aerobic activity, strength training, or even counting your daily steps. Our new app will even help you track some of the foods you eat to help you maintain a balanced diet. You can measure how well you're doing spiritually, in exercise, and with your diet by checking your progress by week or month. All of this, plus access to conference videos, photos, blogs, news, and more. Available at your fingertips on your iPhone or Android, or on any tablet. Download the new Great Plains Conference app today.
We're back on Harvesting the Great Plains. Todd Seifert now has a story to share about two pastors who are taking their message to the air. Todd?
Thank you, Jana. Long gone are the days of opening the church doors on Sunday morning to a large influx of new people. To reach people in our communities now, churches have to recognize and capitalize on opportunities, some that might be even unconventional for a local church. Well, I recently traveled to Lincoln, Nebraska, where two pastors from Christ United Methodist Church share their more progressive brand of Christianity on the airwaves, via radio, every Saturday morning.
Good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to Counterbalance Radio, a progressive Christian talk show featuring Beth Menhuesen and myself, Richard Randolph, as co-host. Beth and I are both pastors at Christ Connection Point United Methodist Church here in Lincoln, Nebraska. We are one church in two locations with two very different personalities, but a shared commitment to acting inclusively, seeking God, serving others, and doing justice.
We're listeners of KZUM here in Lincoln and enjoyed the programming, but we had a congregation member who really pushed us for months to do something on KZUM, because he's an avid listener too. And so we're like, okay, that's nice, Mark. Yeah, maybe we'll consider doing something on KZUM.
Then we saw online that KZUM, which is our station, it's a public access station here in Lincoln, they were asking for proposals for new radio shows. And so we said, why don't we throw up a proposal and see what they think?
So you submitted a proposal for your idea, and then if they liked the idea, they would accept you to this. It was like a four-week class that we had to go to learn how to run the soundboard and everything here in the studio, and how to do a good job on the air. And so we went to that, passed our tests, and then got to start our show.
So Christ United Methodist Church and its satellite campus, Connection Point, had a radio show. But what would the subject matter be? What would provide the content for 1 hour every Saturday morning? What would be this show's niche?
Most of what we hear as the Christian perspective, in American media, is the very conservative perspective. And so we really thought we would like to counterbalance that perspective with our own, which is more more centered, a left-leaning, certainly more progressive. We just really wanted to get those ideas out there to show people that conservative Christians aren't the only Christians out there. And so that's kind of what led us to start Counterbalance. We've talked about social issues like gun control. We've talked about science and religion. So sort of, can you accept the Bible and science? We think you can. We did a whole series about what it means to be human. A lot of our theologies that tell us what it means to be human can often exclude people with profound disabilities, people who can't talk, who we can't verify their brain activity. So we talked about that. We talked about the human soul, science and the human soul. And then that kind of led us into a conversation about abortion and if we can be pro-choice and be Christians.
It's taking on issues that people don't normally associate with the church and with being Christian, like science, for example. Our episode today was all about genetics. How many Christian talk shows talk about genetics?
Topics are wide-ranging. To ensure the subjects are relevant, Menhuesen and Randolph both said they have to pay attention to the news and events in the Lincoln area. The show holds them accountable for doing the research necessary to produce the weekly program in an informed and entertaining manner.
We determine what a topic's going to be sort of largely based on what we think is interesting. So something in the news that's caught our attention, something that we've had conversations about with other people lately. A lot of times if there's like a special speaker like coming to Lincoln, coming to one of the churches here, coming to the university, we'll try to capitalize on that and try to get them for an interview while they're here in town, or if we can't do it that week, get their information and reach out to them later, like, hey, remember you were in Lincoln? We'd love to interview you. So that's kind of how we do that. That's how we got the interview this week with someone from Harvard Medical School. She came here to Lincoln to do kind of a symposium at Innovation Campus, and Richard met her there, and then just reached back out to her and said, hey, they want to do an interview with us. So the greater kind of the audience that would go to a live event might be a little different than the one that listens to the radio, so it helps give people more reach.
The two hosts aren't exactly the odd couple, but Manuzin is a seminary student serving as an associate pastor, and Randolph is a senior pastor with an ample amount of experience in the local church and even on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., fighting hunger and other social justice issues. The two see their differences as a strength.
The program manager told me yesterday, he said, one of the things I like about your show is I really like the chemistry between you and Beth. And I think we have great chemistry both on the air and off the air. She's a 20-something, a millennial, and I'm a baby boomer. And so we do come at it from different perspectives. We also come at it from a female versus male perspective. We've had different experiences in life, and I just think we complement one another and play off one another pretty well.
I think that's one thing that actually made us think that we could do radio is because we do naturally have a good chemistry together. You know, we can sit and just spitball for hours about any given topic. I think, you know, we each have perspectives that interest one another. Partly, I think, because we're separated by, you know, age and life experience, we're generally interested in what the other has to say. And so I think that kind of comes naturally, and I hope it comes across on the air.
I'm excited when I come in. It's fun. It's a great way to get started on a Saturday morning, but also it's a way, and it's really about reaching out to people and saying, you know, Christianity can reach out, and it's broader than you probably think, and it can be a part of your life, even though you may have thought that it couldn't.
We've gotten good feedback from the listeners. We have people in our congregation that give us feedback pretty readily, and I think the feedback we've gotten is that we provide a really holistic perspective on some of these issues. Like, oh, I really appreciate, they'll say, like, I really appreciate that you address this issue from all sides, and we're really, really fair in your discussion of it. We get call-ins. Some of the call-ins we get are from people we've never met before that are just listening, and so that's great. And they've expressed kind of gratitude just for getting some of these ideas out there. Overall, people have responded well to it. And I think KZUM really likes having us here.
You've been listening to Counterbalance, a progressive Christian talk show hosted by me, Beth Manhusen, and my co-host Richard Randolph. Today we've been discussing the advances in genetics and their implications for our Christian faith, both ethically and theologically.
Have a great weekend, and may you experience the peace of God in your life.
I'd like to thank Reverend Dr. Richard Randolph and Pastor Beth Manhusen for letting me spend a little time with them on a Saturday morning. If you want to hear more of their story and hear how other churches in Nebraska and Kansas are using technology as an evangelism tool, check out my podcast, In Layman's Terms. It's available via the Great Plains website at greatplainsumc.org/podcasts. You'll hear stories about other churches from Kansas and Nebraska who are using social media, their websites, and more to reach people for Christ. And now, back to you, Jana.
Thanks for that story, Todd. Well, that wraps up another episode of Harvesting the Great Plains. I'm glad you joined us. Join us again next time.
This Health Boost is brought to you by the Abundant Health Initiative of the United Methodist Church.
Get up, get ready. It's time for a Health Boost. Let's unite to boost our holistic well-being. Strengthen your spirit with this 1 minute breathing meditation. Let's begin deepening our breath. Big breath in. Slow breath out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. And out. One more cycle. In. And out. Bring your awareness back to the present. Acknowledge this moment of peace you've been a part of and take it with you throughout the rest of your day. Smile and let the joy of healthy living flood through your body.
In creating abundant health for everyone. Learn more at umcabundanthealth.org.